Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
They've got toads going on. Cream and Sugar, Trump, an alien spacecraft. The stick doesn't even have to go up the ass. The whole hand fits.
And now, today's episode.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be your host. Can I get you something? Please just put all the coats on the bed upstairs and let's have a party. Come on, give me a break. Welcome to the show. This is really, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I could charge you for this. You wouldn't listen. This is free. You don't have to pay for this at all. I'm not going to charge you for this. There's no recurring charge. The value of this program, $5,000. Easy $5,000 with inflation and all that stuff. Come on. But this is given to you for free every single weekday. So I don't know what you're complaining about. Anyway, Cindy Crawford, man, she's getting on my nerves. Really? Is that what this show's going to be about? Cindy Crawford? Yes. Well, not all of it. I'm watching television yesterday, which I tend to do every day, and there a commercial pops up, and Cindy Crawford is in it. She's trying to sell me skin cream and makeup and everything that's supposed to make women look like Cindy Crawford. If I were a woman, I would hate Cindy Crawford. How dare you splash your face on television and make women feel bad about themselves? Do you know how old Cindy Crawford is? Don't answer, I can't hear you. She's 52 years old. Now, in dog years, that's not all so bad. 52 is not old. But when you're looking like a supermodel without one little crack in your face, she looks pretty good for 52. And her purpose is to sell you stuff so that you think that if you put this stuff on your face, you'll look like Cindy Crawford. She should be working for the Trump administration because it's just all bullshit. No one's going to look like Cindy Crawford except for Cindy Crawford. And even Cindy Crawford doesn't look like Cindy Crawford. If Cindy Crawford didn't have all her makeup on and all these people like chiseling away at her face to make her look young 24/7 at the age of 52, you might look better than Cindy Crawford. If Cindy Crawford wants to do a real good feel-good commercial, let's see her face on television without any makeup whatsoever. And we would all look at her and we would respond, you know, we'd go, wow, ooh, she doesn't, that's Cindy Crawford, yes, that's Cindy Crawford, no. And then do a split screen and show Cindy Crawford wearing her products and then she looks like Cindy Crawford. Because the message would be, nobody looks like Cindy Crawford. But the way that they portray her on television is that if you don't look like Cindy Crawford, well, shame on you, you're butt ugly. I don't know why this sells. This should make people angry. There should be like Cindy Crawford posters all over the United States with a big like X running through her face. Cindy Crawford, the queen of making you feel bad about yourself. You will never look like Cindy Crawford. Don't even try. Don't even bother buying her stuff. Now, that's how women should feel about Cindy Crawford. Men should be even angrier. Because most men will never, never have the company of somebody who looks like Cindy Crawford. I don't care if she's 52 or 82 or 17. Nobody is going to be walking around with a Cindy Crawford kind of person. It just isn't. Can you imagine, Miss? I don't know if she's married or not. I really have no idea. I didn't Google this. But if there's a Mr. Crawford, he must be totally confused. When she goes to bed at night, she just looks like a normal, horrible person. And but when she goes out, she looks like a supermodel. This must confuse Mr. Crawford like crazy. Cindy, I don't know who you are. I don't know which one you are, Cindy. Cindy is the one without the makeup. Or is she the one with the makeup? It's a question of your perception. So Cindy's bothering me, and I'm the older I get, the less I can tolerate this kind of stuff. I want natural-looking people. That's why I get a little bit confused about women as well. I've talked about this before, but not to this extent, my God. Not for free. Women, I don't understand how this happened. Men don't wear makeup. They don't wear makeup. Unless they're on a television interview show or something like that, they'll put stuff on their face, you know, so that they don't glare and their faces don't get shiny and stuff. But men don't wear makeup. They just don't. Boys, men, they don't wear makeup. They walk around the way that they really look. A sad commentary? Yes, usually. But women and other men seem to accept men for just looking the way that they look. You see this man? That's the way he looks. That's it. Nothing's going to be enhanced or taken away. That's just the way they look. Women, I have no idea how they look. Unless you live with a woman, you have no idea how she looks. Because when she's out in public, she puts clown makeup on. It's like a circus event. It's Cirque du Soleil every single day. She paints her face. She puts eyebrows on. And if they're not her eyebrows, then they're painted on to a constant look of surprise. And the lipstick, I don't know what color lips any woman has anymore. I don't know. Are they red like that all the time? I don't know. I can't tell. You got stuff on it. Face. I don't know what your face is like. Do you have imperfections in your face? You got a couple of lines, or are you turning yellow? I don't know what you are, because you put foundation on your face. It's like Trump. It's like you build a wall on your face every day. I have no idea. I don't know what you look like. I don't know how tall you are either. Most of you wear heels when you're out in public, if you're going to an event. I don't know how tall you really are. You look like you're 5'8". Nah, you're really 5'2". What are you fooling me for? Why are you doing that? I have no idea what you look like whatsoever. Unless I'm married to you or you're living with me, then I just look over the other side of the bed but I don't know which one you are. Which one are you? It's so different to be a woman. I've never been a woman. I don't know if you knew that. I never was. So I don't know what it's like. Is there a phobia that women have, females, about going out in public and looking the way they really are? Is that a phobia? Is that a problem? Do all females, by societal types of upbringing, are they all like bipolar? I mean, are they all two different people? The ones that you see in public as opposed to the ones you see behind closed doors in a house. Which is it? Which is you? What drove women to feel like they have to look like something else in order to be attractive? That to me is a visit to the Dr. Phil show. You've got some kind of problem. You can't be happy with what you really look like. You've got to put stuff on your face to make you look different so that you can be acceptable. It's a problem. I just thought I'd bring that out. I mean, we all know that, but no one ever talks about it until I saw Cindy Crawford on television. She brought it out of me. She got me going. Cindy. I don't know what I'm looking at, Cindy. I really don't. And what is her job as a model? To sit there. Cindy, thanks for showing up to work.
What do you want me to do?
See that stool over there? Yes, sit on it. All right. Sit on it for like 10 minutes. We'll take some pictures and go home. I'll give you like $2 million. All right. Seriously, Cindy? The most work Cindy has to do is to sit in the stool they put the makeup on. Don't move, Cindy.
I won't. For $2 million, I will not move.
All right, Cindy, now we're really going to put you to work.
Okay, what do you want me to do?
Turn your head to the left.
How about like this?
Great. $2 million right there.
Thank you. I'm really exhausted.
Well, before you go home, Cindy, can you do me one favor?
What is that?
Take your left hand, put it on your hip, and just kind of like lean to the right a little bit. That's it. That's it.
All right. Anything else?
No, that's it. Go home. Another $2 million.
Thank you. I'm exhausted. Thank you.
Can you come back tomorrow?
Nah, I need a week off. I need a week off. I can't.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Can I keep the clothes?
Sure.
Thank you.
What kind of life is that, Cindy? Who's got the easiest job in show business? On camera? It's Vanna White. Who's Vanna White? Well, maybe you're not old enough. She's still on television. It's apparently America's most popular game show, although it's not. But it's Wheel of Fortune. And the show is so popular, probably, they don't call it Wheel of Fortune anymore. They call it Wheel. That's it. You know, we don't have time to say the whole title of the show. That would take up too much time. We'll just call it Wheel. Okay, fine. You got Pate Sajak, who hosts the thing and talks and runs the whole thing. And then you've got Vanna White, who stands in front of letters. Now, she used to work a lot harder when the show was conceived because the letters were on little pivotable poles. And when a contestant would guess a letter and get it right, she would walk over to the letter and she would turn the thing on the pole and the letter would be revealed. That's what she did for a living. Just look pretty, walk over to the letter, turn it, walk away. $2 million.
What is going on?
When Wheel of Fortune got more technology oriented, she no longer had to turn the letters anymore when a contestant guessed a proper letter. She now walks over to the cube that holds the letters, and she simply touches it with her fingertip, and it lights up. This is what Vanna White does. She walks over to a cube, touches it lightly, it lights up, and she walks away $2 million. She's been doing this for like 3 decades now, and she's got to be exhausted. She's...
You know something, Pat? I don't think I could touch another cube.
Why, Vanna? What's the problem?
I it's so exhausting. You gotta walk to the cube, you gotta touch the bottom corner lightly and walk away. I don't know how much longer I can do this. I'm getting carpal tunnel syndrome. Can't even say it.
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
I know. I was saying to my friend Cindy Crawford yesterday, you know, we're really overworked. We dedicated our lives.
Oh, God, please shut up. Just shut up. Shut up. Shut up. Shut up. Shut up.
Shut up!
Do you realize that there are people working in coal mines and under cars as mechanics? I've got a problem talking today. I should get another job. Maybe I can touch a cube. You got people risking their lives, police officers, firefighters. Every day they don't know if they're going to get home. People sweating their brows in construction and construction accidents and hard-on drivers who spend on postal employees who deliver mail every single day, house after house. Incredible to people sitting in cubicles on keyboards 8-9 hours a day with everything coming at them, it never stops. And they get paid minimum wage. And yet, there's people like Cindy Crawford and Vanna White who do nothing at all but show up. $2 million. Am I angry? Yeah, sure. Do I like them? No. Oh my God.
Looking for someplace new and fun to take the family for breakfast? Then it's time to try Greg's House of Avocado Toast. Featuring all your breakfast favorites. White toast, wheat toast, rye toast, yes, even multigrain toast, and more, all topped with creamy avocado. Or mix it up a little with a toasted English muffin topped with avocado. Come in every Thursday for our chef's special creation, sourdough toast with avocado. If it's toast with avocado on top, you'll find it, and nothing else, at Greg's House of Avocado Toast.
Mmm, tasty. I was there yesterday. Anyway, I've got a great guest coming up a little bit later in the program. We're going to talk about the power of the mind, how you can actually you can use your mind in ways you never thought possible. I'm going to speak to an expert about that who wrote the book about it, and we'll do that rather shortly as I continue my disdain against good-looking women. Do you ever get the fat sucked out of you? Oh, wait a minute, Ron. What? Do you ever get the fat sucked out of you? There are places you can go where you can get the fat sucked out of you. And it isn't necessarily surgery where they open up your body and they remove fat and then they stitch it up and all that kind of stuff. I think they call that a lap dance. What do they call that? No, that's something else. What do they call that there where they take... you don't have to do that. There are places you can go now. They're not hospitals, and they put a little fat-sucking needle into your stomach there or your body, and they actually suck the fat out. Yeah, they do. And then they show you afterwards. I had a friend that had that done, and then they show you afterwards. They collect the fat in these little jars. Actually, they're big jars. And then they walk up to you because they've got to prove to you that this is such a wonderful thing, and they show you your fat in a jar that was just sucked out of you. And then you go home. I mean, it's, you have to heal a little bit. There's a couple of little puncture wounds there in your stomach or wherever you had the fat removed. But you go right home. You don't stay in a hospital or anything. There's no stitching of skin. There's nothing like that. If you're really fat, then you got the hanging skin, and then you got to deal with that. But I think hanging skin is better than fat. I don't know if they let you take the fat home. I would want to take the fat home. I would want to, I would say, can I have the jar of my fat, please? What do you want to do with that? Use it for basic cooking. Wow, you're strange. Well, you know, why not? It's my fat, isn't it? They actually suck the fat out of you. And you look kind of better. I mean, you don't look like 100% thin, but you look better than when you walked in. And you got to wear this plastic saran wrap around your stomach, your abdomen for like 4 months. But, you know, small price to pay. I don't know. It works for some people. The problem is it's not a lifestyle change. So in about 6 months to a year, your fat comes back. It doesn't stop your fat from ever showing up. It's not like reducing the size of your stomach to the point where if you eat too much, you throw up. It's not that. It's just a temporary thing. You have to stop eating so much, otherwise you got to get your fat sucked out again. I don't know what the technical word for it is. I call it fat sucking. So there is a way out. But then you got to change your lifestyle, and that's the problem. I don't want to change my lifestyle. I like my lifestyle. I like to eat. I like to drink. I like to be horrible. I don't. I like this. When I see a commercial with pizza in it, I want pizza. I don't fool around there. I want pizza. And I will get in my car and I will search the ends of the earth until I find the pizza. I'm very food ready. At any time. You show me a piece of food and I want it. Now, I'm not that bad where I eat everything in sight. I've never had the fat sucked out of me. But I do, unfortunately, have this need to consume things that look rather impromptu desirable to me. I wonder if Cindy Crawford eats. Maybe that's the only downside of being a supermodel or a letter turner. I guess you can't really have a lifestyle. Unless Cindy gets the fat sucked out of her every once in a while. I'm sure she gets the fat sucked out of her face every once in a while. I don't think my fat should be in a jar. I think it should be placed somewhere else in my body. You know who I think is really disgusting? People who get injections into their lips. I think they're fat lips. I don't think they look good. They think that they look voluptuous and ready for puckering. I think you got fat lips. I find that that's quite unattractive. When I kiss a female, I don't want to be engulfed by them. I don't want to be sucked into their universe. The other thing I don't like, as much as you're asking me, is black lipstick. Who came up with that? Why would women paint their lips black? What? I don't understand why women paint their lips at all, to be honest with you. But black? What? Who thinks that's attractive? It looks like you spent like 6 months in the frozen tundra and the skin fell off of your lips and now they turn blue, purple, and now they're black. It looks like some type of horrendous lip disease. And you want to look voluptuous with black lips? Are you kidding me? Is it the vampire look that apparently turned people on? What is with the black lipstick, man? That's odd to me. Whenever I see black lipstick, I just stare at the person and I wonder, have they just sucked the life out of somebody in order to get their blood, which they feed off of? Why do you have black lips? Is there some type of horrible disease that you have encountered and your lips turn black? Don't get near me. Don't get near me. And if I kiss you, will there be black all over my face? Will there be little black lip marks all over and people will stare at me and say, well, did you have some type of an ink accident? What happened? Do you not know how to, in a clean manner, replace your ink cartridges in your printer? Oh, speaking of that, before I forget, as long as I'm complaining about everything, and thanks for listening, by the way. What's up with printers? Computer printers. Here's the problem with that. And this is true. You can get a really good printer for $79, $80. A really good one. They've come down in price. And you say to yourself, wow, this is pretty cool. This is a good price for a printer. And then you run out of ink like 3 weeks later because they give you a little starter ink thing, which doesn't last more than 3 weeks. And you go down to the store to get some replacement printing ink, and that's $85, $90. Wait a minute. The ink costs more than the printer did. Yeah, and you'll be buying the printer ink on a regular basis. Whoa, this doesn't make sense to me. This is like buying a brand new car and then filling it up with gas that costs more than the car did. What? How much was that car?
That was $38,000.
I know that's a lot of money. It's $38,000. I bought it for $38,000. Then I found out when it ran out of gas, I went to the gas station, and to fill up my tank, $44,000.
Wow, that doesn't sound like a good deal anymore.
No, it doesn't, does it? Well, that's the way it is with printer ink.
Ink costs more than the printer itself. Every time.
It makes no sense. Now, gasoline, that's manufactured, refined, all that kind of crap. I can understand that being somewhat expensive. A small little amount of printer's ink, maybe about an ounce of it, not even, that's $40. What? Where are you getting this from? Where is this ink coming from? India? Where is it? Is it imported from Saturn? Where does this ink come from that it costs so much money? I mean, gasoline is like what, $3? No, not even $2.50 a gallon. Printer's ink. It's like $300 a gallon at that rate. What are we doing? Why is can you come up with a formula that would make ink less expensive to produce, perhaps? I don't know what ink is made out of. I don't know if extracted from Himalayan sheep. I have no idea where it's coming from, but it's way too expensive. And don't you dare tell me that's how much it costs to package and produce the ink. That's bullshit. It doesn't cost that much. It couldn't possibly. It's freaking ink. Are you serious? Why are pens free at the bank? But printer's ink, off the charts. Off the charts. You know, you can't say, Ron, you know, you nitpick. No, this is a good example of how things don't make sense. All right, it's time to speak to our guest. It's time to use our mind to make things better. Because otherwise, this certainly isn't working out. Okay, we got our guest ready. Here we go. Hello.
Hi there, Ron.
We're talking to the pioneer of the international mindfulness movement, Jon Kabat-Zinn. And we're talking about his new audiobook series, which is fascinating. It's called The Healing Power of Mindfulness. Let's just start with the basics here. What indeed is mindfulness?
So there's a lot of talk nowadays about mindfulness, so it's really good. A good place to start is to ask, what the hell is it?
Mm-hmm.
And mindfulness is basically awareness. So it's not something that I invented or something that, you know, is particularly Asian or Western or anything. It's human awareness. It's pure awareness. But what's cultivatable is not awareness itself, but our access to it.
Okay.
So we're usually so busy caught up in thought and thinking and emotional reactivity that we don't have much awareness. We're caught in our stories of who we are and what's going on. And so, in a certain way, lost in thought. And what mindfulness is a disciplined form of cultivating intimacy with the present moment. So my working definition of mindfulness is that it's the awareness that arises from paying attention on purpose,
yes,
in the present moment and non-judgmentally.
Okay.
And all of that's pretty easy until you get to the non-judgmental part. And so I need to say that non-judgmental doesn't mean that we won't have judgments. It means that we'll become aware of how judgmental we are and suspend our judging, so to speak, and just learn how to rest in awareness itself.
Well, we all have goals that we constantly try to meet. Some of us set the goals too high, some of them not at all. But for some reason, the mindfulness part doesn't carry us even close to those goals, and yet the mind should be taking us there.
Well, you know, it partly depends on how willing you are to befriend your mind and not make it into one more competition. So often what we try to do is we try to beat ourselves into shape. And a lot of people do that in the gym, and they make New Year's resolutions. Yes. I'm going to work out. I'm going to lose weight and everything.
Yes. But,
and 3 weeks later, they're finished with that.
Right.
And the reason I'm on the radio talking with your, to your program and your listeners is that I don't want that to happen. I want people to listen to this program and forever in their lives, in some sense, have it be changed so that they are more in touch with at this moment, they're hearing what you and I are talking about. So that's not just you and me. They're participating in it. And if they're following what's being said, they're realizing, oh, maybe my mind is a certain bit out of control and into all sorts of ruts that don't actually do me any favors. And maybe it's possible to actually learn how to pay attention in a way that drops me into my body, drops me into my breathing, drops me into this moment, whether it's a pleasant moment or a hugely stressful, unpleasant moment, and learn how to be in wiser relationship with what's going to happen, what I'm capable of, and therefore you're changing the future because the next moment's going to be very different if you do that in this one.
Yeah.
And that's a discipline. It's like going to the gym. It's like working out with a weight.
Yeah.
You do it repetitively until you begin to realize that this is actually shifting you from automatic pilot mode into moment-by-moment fully awake mode.
Yeah.
And that has enormous consequences for our emotional relationships with our children, with our partners, with life itself, with nature.
Has our relationship with our mind kind of become more difficult because of all of the technology and the social media and the political political unrest? I mean, it seems like a struggle just to have enough time to sit down with yourself and exercise your mind.
And as soon as you do, you pull out your phone.
Yeah.
And even now, there are mindfulness apps. I'm even guilty of that. I mean, my guided meditations are, mindfulnessapps.com. So sometimes you have to use the technology to defeat the technology, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right. And we're just at the beginning of the effect that the digital revolution is going to have on the human species.
Yeah.
It's going to change work forever with artificial intelligence, and your phone now knows more about you and your buying habits and where you go and what you want and what you hope for than you do. And believe me, there are people who are paid enormous amounts of money to figure out what the next steps are in this.
Yeah.
And we need to defend ourselves from it, not by making AI the adversary, but seeing if we can actually get in touch with HI, which is human intelligence, while we still have a chance. And, after all, our species is called Homo sapiens sapiens in Latin, which means the species that is aware and knows that it's aware. So Linnaeus, who named us, really knew that mindfulness was a very, very big part of this, but we haven't quite lived our way into it. So to answer your question, I really feel like this is not some luxury or some like dime store thing that you do when you don't have enough time in your life to, do important things. This is the absolute crux of what it means to be fully human.
Yeah, in the mythological stories, it's always those that are of great minds that seem to flourish. It seems like that's like the foundation
exactly.
of everything.
It's the cultivation of wisdom.
Yeah,
it's the cultivation of wisdom.
There you go.
And the cultivation of compassion and the cultivation of empathy, because that's our best self. When we're our best selves, we're not sort of contracted. And that feels so good.
Yeah.
I mean, it just feels so good. That's the root source of happiness, well-being, and now we know enough about the molecular biology of meditation and the neuroscience of meditation, of deep well-being, deep health.
Well,
that's why the book is called The Healing Power of Mindfulness. I didn't really want to call it The Healing Power of Mindfulness because it sounds so hyped, healing power of this, healing power of that. But now we have so much evidence that this is, in fact, healing. And by healing, what I mean is coming to terms with the actuality of things as they are. So it doesn't mean fixing, it doesn't mean curing, it means dealing with things as they are. And we think, well, how can I do that? Only, you know, somebody like, you know, Mother Teresa or some saint could do that. No, you can do that. You have the full repertoire of being human as anybody else. And the real challenge is you already have it. The question is, can you access it when you need to? And of course, if every moment you have a spare moment, you go for your phone, that is not going to happen. You have to have a spare moment and go to your belly, go to the open spaciousness of awareness itself.
Well, it's said that the mind, we haven't even covered a speck of the abilities and power of the mind. And I know that's where you're coming from. This is, it's fascinating. We don't have time to get into this to any great extent, but it's the healing power of mindfulness. It's an audio book, so like you got nothing to argue about here. You just listen to it, and I guess you kind of open your mind to use your mind and succeed with your mind. So sounds great. And how do we get a hold of it? And how do we contact you and your website?
Well, my website is www.mindfulnesscds.com because those guided meditations, they're in app form and in other forms downloadable and so forth. It also has a section on all the various books I've written and some of the meditation practices. You know, there's a lot of information on that website. But the most important thing is not to contact me. It's to contact you, yourself, the listener, and befriend yourself in a certain way. And that's the best way to actually make use of what I'm trying to put out, so to speak, is to really connect in a very deep way with yourself and to trust that in your own, the way I say it, it's kind of a shorthand, but it's trust in your own beauty and the fact that you're already okay. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not broken, even if you may feel that way. And that there's an infinite number of resources that you have by virtue of being human that you can tap into and continue learning, growing, healing, and transforming your relationship with reality moment by moment throughout your life.
He's Jon Kabat-Zinn, and it's The Healing Power of Mindfulness. Great conversation. Thank you for spending the time.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure. Pleasure, Ron.
Take care.
Be well.
All right. You too. Bye-bye. All right. That'll do it for today. I've overextended myself, as you can see. So I'm packing up my bags. I'll be leaving you now. I'll be back again tomorrow. Tomorrow's show will also be free. I'll make that announcement right now. So please join me tomorrow for a brand new episode. Until then, I wish you peace.